To the Tuesday, June 23rd meeting of the Senate Committee on Rules. And if anyone is here today for Senate Bill 75, we will not be taking that up today. We are awaiting an amendment, but everything else will be happening on our schedule. So first we have executive appointments, and we're going to take them in order. So, oh, okay. Before we do that, we do have a representative here with us. So I will open a public hearing and work session on House Concurrent Resolution 30. Ask Representative Huffman to come forward. And Erin, would you tell us about this one?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. HCR 30 designates Oregon as a Purple Heart State.
Welcome, Representative Huffman.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum and committee. I appreciate your time in hearing this this bill on the Purple Heart State. It's connected with a lot of the highway bills that we've passed through the body over the last several biennia, and honoring our war heroes and veterans. And this is just kind of a continuation of that. And I have a couple of gentlemen here with me. We appreciate your time. We will be brief, but we'll give you just enough information to make it worth your time. And so I will hand it off to them. Thank you.
Good afternoon.
Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum and distinguished committee members. I am Dick Tobiasen, chairman of the Bend Heroes Foundation, a nonprofit 501c3 organization in Bend honoring veterans. I'm a retired Army Lieutenant Colonel, Master Army Aviator, and a two-tour Vietnam veteran. I'm a member of the American Legion, the Bend Band of Brothers, the Military Officers Association of America. I'm a life member of the Military Order of the Purple Heart, Veterans of Foreign Wars, and Vietnam Veterans of America. I received the Purple Heart Medal for combat wounds in Vietnam 48 years ago. It is a high honor for me to testify before you in support of HCR 30 today. And thank you, Representative Huffman, for the nice introduction. As Representative Huffman says, HCR 30 is related to a series of bills that relate to war veterans' highways, which have been completed, the World War II Veterans Historic Highway in 97 and the Vietnam Veterans Memorial Highway on Interstate 84. So we've put up 34 signs on those highways, and we veterans have raised all the money and worked nicely with ODOT to install those signs. So in the last month, the Governor Brown signed HB 2036, which allows us to put up signs on four more veterans highways, US 395, Interstate 5, and US 101. So this will complete our project that we saw 7 years ago to honor veterans of all wars on border-to-border highways, and some of them will be the first United States. We want to thank Representative Huffman for promoting these honors in HCR 30, as well as that will honor the 21,000 veterans from Oregon who either lost their lives or were wounded in five major wars since World War I over the last 98 years. Representative Huffman also spearheaded HB 2036 for us, as well as previous bills, SB 449 and SB 461. So what is the Purple Heart? Well, you can see one right here. Commander Upton and I both earned these in Vietnam. It's our nation's oldest military medal. It was instituted by then General George Washington. And in my testimony, which you have, there's a page, top of page four, there's a nice summary of what the Purple Heart, how it was founded, and where it is today. Bob Maxwell is a director of our foundation, and he is a World War II veteran. He's the oldest living Medal of Honor recipient in the United States. He asked me personally at lunch yesterday to try to convince you to vote for HCR 30. He's not only the Medal of Honor recipient, but he has two Purple Hearts, two Silver Stars, Bronze Star, and French Croix de Guerre, and more. About 1.8 million Americans have received the Medal of Honor since it became available from World War I. And in Oregon, we're talking about 21,000 veterans who would have been eligible for our nation's oldest and rarely awarded medal. The statistics are not as clean as we'd like to be. We know how many killed in action we have and wounded in action. We have to estimate based on national statistics, but I think our numbers are pretty good. We have the 1st, the 82nd Cav just came back from Afghanistan, and in our little community of Redmond, Oregon, we have three new Purple Heart recipients, and I think we want to honor them as well. So if we look at Oregon's veterans over the last 98 years in five major wars, starting with World War I, about 400, just under half a million have served. And of those, about 4.5% have earned the medal, the Purple Heart Medal. About 55% of all the veterans who served in war from World War I to the present are still living in Oregon. That's a big number. So the Purple Heart itself is a medal. Not only is it the oldest, rarely awarded, but it overarches all other services in all wars. So it has a deep meaning to many of us. What we would like to do, if this becomes law, is to we would have plaques and markers that would go in certain places. They would not go on highways. In other words, there's no ODOT involvement. So Commander Upton has an image of what we're looking at, and we would put these at the major war memorials in Oregon. For instance, the World War II memorial right around the corner, the World War I memorial in the back of ODVA, where you used to work, Senator, the Korean War memorial in Wilsonville, the Vietnam memorial in Portland, and the Oregon Fallen Heroes memorial in Central Point that was created by Representative Dennis Richardson. So our proposal is to honor fallen veterans with prominent markers at places where they're memorialized. It would not be on highway signs. So that is the concept of how we would do that. So I respectfully request the committee, this distinguished committee, to vote on HCR 30. Thank you very much, and I'd like please to answer any questions you might have.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
My name is Charles Upton, and I'm the Department Commander for the Military Order of the Purple Heart, Combat Wounded Veterans. Chair Rosenbaum, distinguished committee members. I don't have a written, but this comes from my heart. In days of old, when men were bold, they did not talk about their wounds or their experiences because that's just the way they were. Well, Dick and I are in that era. We don't talk about it, but we're here to ensure that the state of Oregon recognizes the suffering that we have went through during any of the wars, from World War I up to the present one. We don't show our wounds. Our wounds might be mental or physical, and some of us have both. And excuse me, the wounds that we do have, people don't know. It would be surprising to go on the street and said, "What is the Purple Heart for?" The surprising that people would say, "Oh, that's for something heroic," or "That's for something you did that earned respect." Well, they don't know that you have to be a combat wounded soldier to receive one. And we are very proud of it, but we don't talk of it. If you went out into the streets today, I don't think that you would have, if you lined it up, 20 Purple Heart recipients, if you had two that would say, "I'm a Purple Heart recipient." With this signs that we have or we're having made in the Purple Heart state, we don't have to. People will say, they'll learn what a Purple Heart means, and they might say, "Wow, what kind of suffering these men went through," men and women nowadays. I urge you to accept this bill and carry on or help carry on our mission to educate our system. Thank you.
Well, thank you for bringing this to us. It seems like a very fitting way to honor our heroes. You. And please give our regards to Dr. Maxwell.
I will do that.
To him. Do we have any questions? Okay, thank you all for your testimony. And I will close the public hearing and open a work session on House Concurrent Resolution 30. Senator Farioli.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I move House Concurrent Resolution 30 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Senator Farioli has moved HCR 30 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there discussion on the motion? there objection to the motion? Motion carries. Senator Boquist, I see you are a chief sponsor. Would you be willing to be our carrier?
Delighted, ma'am.
Thank you, and I'll close the work session on HCR 30. And next, I will open a public hearing on House Joint Memorial 16 and call Representative Widener. And Erin, could you tell us about this one?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, HJM 16 urges Congress to work with Turkish diplomats, European Union, and NATO allies to stop mass arrest and detainment of journalists in Turkey.
And welcome Representative Widener to the Senate Rules Committee.
Thank you, Chair Rosenbaum. Chair Rosenbaum and distinguished members of the Senate Committee on Rules, thank you for hearing HJM 16 today. My name is State Representative Jim Widener from House District 24, which encompasses most of Yamhill County and Southwest Washington County. And my senator sits up onto your right, so my fearless leader, so for the House side. HJM 16 was easily passed across the House floor. We're excited to keep momentum going on this important legislation. HJM 16 deals with a very important issue, the inalienable right of free speech and the necessity of a free press in a democracy. It has been an honor and a pleasure to reconnect and work alongside Commissioner Jules Bailey and members of the Turkish community in Portland. You'll find letters of support from Commissioner Bailey and letters from members of the Turkish community on OLUS. I am sure that many of you are already aware, but this past December, a nationwide crackdown on free speech has taken place in Turkey, jailing journalists critical of the government. Furthermore, this turbulent news reported on foreign journalists being expelled, censorship of websites, and forced closures of TV stations. Turkey has routinely been under scrutiny for such actions, but recently the level of media suppression reached new heights. You may be asking, why are we talking about free speech in Turkey? I can give you three answers why. First, in the spirit of friendship, we cannot stay silent when an ally country like Turkey is infringing upon the universal human right of free speech. Turkey is a United States ally, a member state of NATO, and has publicly expressed their desire to join the EU. They need to curtail the stifling of free speech and become recommitted to the spirit of a free democratic society. Secondly, we are supporting our two Oregon federal senators, Wyden and Merkley, who co-signed alongside 72 other senators urging Secretary Kerry to work diligently on this freedom of the press issue in Turkey. Please read the letter we have uploaded on OLUS from the offices of Senator Schumer and Senator Vicker. Thirdly, no one and even no state is an island unto itself anymore. The interconnectedness of people, commodities, culture, and business around the globe require that us here in the United States use a voice and do so consistently in the promotion of free democratic societies that elevate this human condition. Having the freedom to criticize the government is a hallmark in the American experience and in all free democratic societies. Here in the United States, the First Amendment is the principal guarantee against corruption because free expression of political opinions serves to educate the citizenry and test their merit in the free marketplace of ideas. Thomas Jefferson said, "The only security of all is in a free press. Where the press is free and every man able to read, all is safe." President Kennedy said, "Without debate, without criticism, no administration and no country can succeed and no republic can survive." But the importance of a free press and speech is universal in those societies who seek self-governance through democracy. And it was Nelson Mandela who said, "A critical, independent, and investigative press is the lifeblood of any democracy." The founder of the Republic of Turkey would agree. It was Mustafa Kemal Atatürk who declared that no country is free unless it is democratic. Oregon has a forward-thinking tradition of humanitarian perspectives that has resulted in numerous resolutions, divestitures, and other memorials just like this. We have a sizable population of Turkish Americans living here in Oregon. Again, Turkey is a NATO ally and until recently was a model for democratic reform with free elections and the freedom of expression and free media. The harassment of journalists include Americans like Ivan Watson from CNN, who was detained before being expelled from Turkey. The international community has rallied around these basic human rights, and the United States must always champion these ideals. We need a stable and democratic Turkey allied with the U.S. and NATO, which influences the stability of all governments in the Middle East region. We should pass the memorial, add our voices alongside the federal delegates and the European Union about this important debate about the freedom of press and the role of government. I urge your support of HJM 16.
Well, thank you very much for your testimony and for bringing this to us. Did we have any questions for Representative Widener? Okay, well, thank you again. And I'll close the public hearing on HJM 16 and open a work session on HJM 16. Senator Ferrioli?
Madam Chair, I move HJM 16 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Thank you. Senator Ferrioli has moved HJM 16 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries. And we don't have a Senate sponsor, but
I'm the senator for that. I'll do it.
Senator Boquist will be our carrier, and I will close the work session on HJM 16. And I think we'll go back to the beginning of our hearing and do our executive appointments next. So welcome to the Senate Committee on Rules and Executive Appointments. We have three appointments up for consideration this afternoon, and we will call them one at a time. What we do here is just ask you to introduce yourself briefly and tell us why you wish to serve in this position, and then we'll open it up for questions from committee members, and then we'll be acting on these appointments at the close of our three hearings. So first, I will begin by opening a public hearing on the appointment of Salam Noor as the Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction. If you'd like to come forward. Good afternoon, and welcome to the Senate Rules Committee.
Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum, members of the committee. For the record, Salam Noor, the governor's nominee for the Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction. Thank you for the opportunity to appear before you today, and thank you for your consideration of my nomination. I would be honored to serve Oregon students and schools in this new role. I have been in pre-K-12 and higher education for over 20 years in two states, and I look forward to bringing that experience to the Oregon Department of Education and state-level leadership to improve outcomes for all students. My recent experience in the Salem-Keizer School District helped me appreciate the growing diversity of our schools and students and the importance of keeping the focus on student achievement at all times. I recognize the challenges ahead, and I'm committed to working with all partners to expand opportunities for students so they are ready for school and proficient by third grade, to close the achievement and opportunity gaps in our system, and to ensure students graduate with the knowledge and skills for success in college, careers, and life. I believe that students should have access to effective teachers, quality education, quality instruction, and engaging learning environments no matter where they live or what school they go to. I am committed to working with the legislature, working with the State Board of Education, with the Department of Education, education and business partners, and communities throughout the state to continue to strengthen education and increase the achievement for all students. In closing, I would be honored to serve Oregon students in education in a new role. I bring many years of management and leadership experience to the department, and I will lead with focus, purpose, collaboration, and will strive for results. I believe that I submitted some documentation, and I hope you've had a chance to review it, and I welcome the opportunity to answer any questions that you may have. Thank you again.
Well, thank you for your willingness to serve and for appearing today. Did we have any questions for Mr. Noor?
No, he came and visited me. I had a very long discussion with him.
Great. Any questions from committee members? Okay, well, thank you very much for appearing today. We'll be acting on your appointment at the close of our other two appointments. So I'll close the public hearing, and next I'll open a public hearing on the appointment of John Wiener to the State Board of Psychologist Examiners. If you'd like to come forward.
Good afternoon. Chair Rosenbaum, honored committee members. I'll be brief. My name's John Wiener. I'm from Salem, Oregon. I've been an attorney for 15 years. The majority of my career has been spent in the arena of public defense, everything from misdemeanors up to death penalty post-conviction cases. The last 9 years I've served as a judge part-time at Salem Municipal Court. I've been struck by the substantial overlap between the world of criminal justice and the world of mental health, and that's really what fostered my interest in the world of mental health, and I think led to me being contacted by the board. I think it's an exciting opportunity. It's an important opportunity. Many of the people that have represented or seen before me in court are highly dependent upon the professionalism of this body of professionals, and so I would consider it an honor to be on the board, and I would try real hard.
Okay, well, thank you for your willingness to take on this assignment. Did we have any questions for Mr. Wiener? Okay, I don't see any questions for you, so thank you again.
Thank you.
And I'll close the public hearing, and I think our final appointee is going to be joining us by telephone. Should we get her on the phone first?
Yep, go ahead.
Good afternoon. Is this Sherry Bodiger?
Yes.
Hi, this is Senator Dianne Rosenbaum, Chair of the Senate Rules Committee, and I am opening a public hearing on the appointment of Sherry Bodiger to the Board of Trustees of Southern Oregon University. Thank you for joining us by phone today. What we'd like to hear from you is just briefly a little about your background and why you'd like to serve on the Southern Oregon Board.
Okay, well, good afternoon. And thank you for allowing me to do this on the phone. So my name is Sherry Bodiger, and I have been in the healthcare industry for 30 years. I currently serve as the Vice President and Executive Director for Asante Physician Partners, which is a 180 provider medical group that's part of the largest health system in Southern Oregon, Asante Health System. But have been doing physician group leadership, like I said, for about 30 years. I am very interested in playing a role in the Southern Oregon University Board because I really want to play a role in influencing the direction of our local university. In Southern Oregon, we have a tremendous need to develop a different set of professionals, specifically in the healthcare industry, which is the largest employer down here. We're going through such a tremendous transformation, and we just don't have the skill sets and competencies being produced here in Southern Oregon to provide the leadership jobs that we need and or the other medical jobs that we need. And so I'm hoping that by participating, I can help to the university to look at opportunities to not only develop different programs that are more in line with the competencies that we need here, but also to help local Oregon folks to have access to those programs and be able to stay home when they finish their education. Right now, we import a lot of healthcare professionals from different states, and it'd be really great to be able to find them here locally, grow them here, and keep them home. So that's my interest in being part of this new SOU board.
Well, great. We're very glad you obviously have a busy career going, that you're willing to make time to serve on the Southern Oregon Board. And I can tell you that Senator Alan Bates has joined us in our hearing room here today in Salem and speaks very highly of you as well.
Oh, that's wonderful to hear. Thank you.
Did we have any questions for Ms. Bodiger? Okay, I don't see any questions for you, so we will be acting on your appointment shortly and forwarding it to the full Senate, and thank you for joining us by phone.
Well, thank you very much. Have a great afternoon.
You too.
Bye-bye.
And I'll close the public hearing and open a work session. Members, did we have a need to separate these, or can we do them en bloc?
En bloc.
Okay.
And, Madam Chair, before we take action on the in block motion, we do need to suspend our rules as we did receive one appointment that was not within our 21-day rule requiring to be public, and so we just need to have a motion in order to suspend rule number 20 of the House of the Senate Committee on Rules.
Okay. Senator Ferrioli, would you like
Madam
to make
Chair,
that motion?
Question.
Yes.
And who was it that was deficient in observing our rule about the 21 days?
The governor.
She will sit in a corner for this.
I think she's already in a corner.
Yeah. Madam Chair, do I have a script?
You do not.
Madam Chair, I move that the rules be suspended for the purpose of considering a nomination for appointment with less than the required 21 days.
Okay, thank you. Senator Farioli has moved that the rules be suspended for the purpose of taking up these appointments. Is there any discussion on this motion?
I'm just curious, who was the culprit that we didn't get in 21 days?
Was the last of our three.
Oh, and of course, the last of our three, which the doc is vouching for, so that's okay. I'm fine.
Okay, any...
It's his fault if it goes south.
Any objection to the motion? Okay, the rules are suspended.
Madam Chair, in view of the rules of suspension, I move sine die immediately.
I don't think that was covered by the purpose for which the rules were suspended, but nice try.
I second the motion.
There's three yes votes on the dais, Madam Chair.
Okay, I'm opening a work session and moving the following appointments and reappointments to the following boards and commissions to the Senate floor with the recommendation they be confirmed en bloc. Salam Noor as the Deputy Superintendent of Public Instruction, John Wiener to the State Board of Psychologist Examiners, and Sherry Bottiger to the Board of Trustees of Southern Oregon University. Is there any discussion on the motion?
Madam Chair, I thought you forgot Ms. Sine Die, who was being appointed to the building.
Nice try again. Okay. Any objection to the motion? Okay, the motion carries, and we need a carrier for our en bloc motion. And Senator Farioli, are you?
Madam Chair, I have not carried a nomination motion yet this session.
I thought you had not, so I think it's your turn. Okay, so Senator Farioli will be our carrier, and I'll close the work session. And. Yeah, I'll open a work session on House Bill 3414.
No, I think that's cool.
And it looks like Representative Helm and Senator Burdick are going to join us at the dais.
And Aaron. And staff.
And staff.
Senator Burdick and staff.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3414 creates a fence of failure to keep vehicle in right lane on roads with posted speed greater than 45 miles per hour. Specifies a fence does not occur when traffic is moving slower than normal flow of traffic. Designates a fence as Class B traffic violation punishable by maximum fine of $1,000. Exempt drivers of vehicles governed under ORS 811-325. And outlines conditions under which driver is in the far when the driver is in the far left lane is allowable. You have a -A3 amendment. It creates offensive failure to keep vehicle in right lane on roads with posted speed greater than 55 miles per hour. Changes penalty for failing to yield left lane from Class B to Class D traffic violation. You have a no revenue impact and a minimal fiscal impact on the A3 amendment.
Okay, thank you, Aaron. And please, whoever wants to go first, go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and fellow travelers on the Senate Rules Committee. For the record, my name is Jenny Burdick, and I represent the people of Senate District 18 in parts of West Portland and Tigard. I'm here today to present this very worthy bill, House Bill 3414, which actually came to my attention a couple years ago when Joseph Rose, the commuter columnist of the Oregonian, did a survey on what people's main traffic peeves were, and he called it the peeves. And the issue of left lane hogs on freeways so overwhelmed his survey that he had to rule them out for the following year's peeves because he didn't want to give the same award 2 years in a row. So he has to go every other year. So there's a lot of interest out there in trying to get people who are just basic manners, actually, but people oftentimes get in the left lane and they block the traffic, and then people do foolish things like tailgating and swerving around and passing on the right in the blind spot. So this is bill has been the subject of a little bit of amusement, but it's also a very serious traffic safety bill. And I am joined here at the dais by my legislative aide, Kate Grossweiler, in case any questions are too hard, and my honorable colleague from the House, Representative Ken Helm. who did a wonderful job getting this through the other chamber. So I'll be available for questions after we hear from, I assume, from Representative Helm.
Thank you. Please go ahead.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee. For your record, Ken Helm, State Representative from House District 34. I wanted to lend my support to this bill and let you know that I am comfortable with the Dash 3 amendments. A piece of information coming from the House side that you might be interested in, that I found interesting, was the vote coming out of the House on this. It was a fairly close vote, 33 votes in favor, but I was more impressed with the composition of the votes, which was not a party line vote by any means. And we had both Republicans and Democrats from across the state voting in favor of this legislation, and I think that is representative of the problem we have out there. This isn't just an I-5 corridor problem, it's an I-84 problem, and it's other major interstates where you have multiple lanes and you have folks that are trying to cover great distances in a short amount of time for various reasons. And these folks that are either inconsiderate or clueless and are hanging out in the left lane are not only cause irritation, but they also cause unsafe conditions. In the state of Washington, after implementing a similar rule that as we're proposing a couple years ago, the state police or the patrol up there, between tickets and warnings, issued about 14,000 of these. And the folks up there, the law enforcement individuals up there, believe this is having a real impact on traffic flow and safety. And that was my intent in bringing this bill, is to both educate the public, increase the safety, and increase the enjoyment of folks traveling on our major roadways. It was not meant to be punitive against folks that are hanging out in the left lane, but mostly to educate them, get them out of the way so that the folks behind them don't demonstrate instances of road rage, which I think we've all encountered out there on the roads. So very much not personally, but I've watched angry driving from others. So I very much want to lend my support to the bill today. Thank you.
Okay, thank you both for your testimony. And Ms. Grossweiler, you're here to just answer questions?
Yes.
Okay, did we have any questions of our colleagues?
Madam Chair.
Yes.
Is there an education program or a phase-in contemplated for the bill as they did in Washington State, warning tickets and a ramp-up, or will people just encounter the red and blue lights in their rearview mirror if they're floating in the left lane?
Mr. Chair, my experience, I've done other traffic safety issues in the area of pedestrians, which you were very helpful with. I want to thank you again. and the way it always works with our state police, with our law enforcement, is there is a period where many, many warnings are issued, and the media typically picks it up. The media has been very interested in this issue, and so there's no fiscal on this, so there won't be a paid program for education, but I'm confident that our wonderful state police out there will implement this in a kind and gentle way, but authoritatively.
And Madam Chair, follow up.
Yes, follow up.
Is there any attempt or any thought about signage, drive right after passing It's the Law or some similar signage to let motorists know that floating in the left lane actually is obstructing traffic?
Madam Chair, Senator Farrelly, we already have signs out there that say slower traffic, keep right. And I think this is more in the area of enforcement. I haven't not talked to ODOT whether they have any plans to do this. We don't order them to do any special signage in this bill.
And Madam Chair, one final question.
Yes.
What exemptions are in the bill for Washington State drivers who seem absolutely not to understand that the left lane isn't reserved for Washingtonians.
Mr. Madam Chair, Senator Perry, would you care to hear my personal theory?
Yes, ma'am.
My personal theory is they have to comply with the law in the state of Washington, and in Oregon, it's all, no holds barred, so you just park in the left lane. That's my personal theory. And this will end the party for them.
And Madam Chair, while Representative Helm was describing road rage, I noticed all eyes swung to one particular. So if Representative Helm, if you need an example, just make sure that you leave 2 minutes before Senator Burdick does and go into the left lane. Check your rearview mirror. You'll see all the road rage example that you need to see. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Will do.
Okay, thank you, Senator Ferrioli. I don't see. Oh, Senator Boquist.
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. I'm trying to understand how Senator Burdick sponsored this. Every time I've been in her district, the traffic is never moving more than 45 miles an hour, and it's always congested. So I think Section 21 and 22, or actually Lines 19 and 20, when the flow of traffic is moving slower than the normal flow of traffic, it's okay to be in the left lane. So the only constituent I have opposed to this would be covered by this. Is that correct, Senator?
Madam Chair, Senator Boquist, I travel widely around the state. So, yes, there are parts of my district where, lamentably, for example, the Terwilliger curves, this would seldom be at issue because the traffic, unfortunately, is jammed up.
Thank you.
Okay, I don't see any other questions for you. So thank you both for your, all three of you. For your testimony, and I will close the public hearing on House Bill 3414 and open the work session on House Bill 3414. Senator Ferrioli.
Madam Chair, I move that we adopt the A3 amendment to House Bill 3414.
Senator Ferrioli has moved the dash A3 amendment to House Bill 3414. Is there any discussion on the amendment?
Ma'am, anything that blocks or prevents the left, I am completely in favor of.
Just waiting for that comment. Okay, any further discussion? Seeing none, amendment is adopted. Senator Ferrioli.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3414A to the floor with the due pass as amended recommendation.
And Senator Ferrioli has moved House Bill 3414A as amended to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any objection? Any discussion, I should have said.
No, I've made
you already
my
made
left-hand
your comment.
Already.
Okay, and any objection? Motion carries. Senator Burdick, will you be our carrier on the floor? Okay.
I would be honored.
And I will close the work session on House Bill 3414. How about if we just get rid of that one so that we. Okay. Mm-hmm. And I'll open a work session on Senate Joint Memorial 12. Erin, would you tell us what this is?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Joint Memorial 12 urges Congress to support development of solution to financial issues arising from marijuana industry and to declassify marijuana as a Schedule 1 drug. We are sending this measure back to the Senate President. I believe it's going to go to the Joint Measure 91 Committee so they can consider it as a joint committee and in the spirit of the context of this measure.
Okay, Senator Ferrioli, did you have a motion?
Madam Chair, I move Senate Bill, excuse me, Madam Chair, I move Senate Joint Memorial 12 without recommendation back to the Senate President's desk for re-referral to another committee.
Senator Ferrioli has moved SJM 12 to the Senate President's desk for re-referral to another committee. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries, and I'll close the work session on SJM 12. And I will open a public hearing on House Bill 3557A.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Bill 3557A restores clear and convincing public interest standard for release of public employees, volunteers, and others' personal information pursuant to public records request, requires public bodies to delay response and forward such requests to the affected persons or their representatives. It permits a public body to recover costs associated with notifying individuals whose personal information is sought and for making determinations whether clear and convincing public interest standard has been met, regardless of whether information is disclosed. Provides civil and criminal immunity to public body or official public body for harm caused by release of information based on the determination. determination that clear and convincing evidence of public interest require disclosure. This measure has an emergency clause on it. It comes to you with no revenue impact. A fiscal impact statement was issued. It also comes to you with 58 aye votes, and two members were excused from the House floor.
Okay, thanks, Erin. We have two people signed up to testify. I'll call them both together, and they're Kelsey Wilson and Chris Fick, if the two of you would like to come forward. And please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Chair Rosenbaum and members of the committee. For the record, my name is Kelsey Wilson, and I'm here today on behalf of the Oregon Newspaper Publishers Association. This is a bill that we requested a little bit later in the session over on the House side after House Bill 3037 passed without a public interest test in the public records exemption that was passed in House Bill 3037. So this adds back the public interest test into that public records exemption. We worked with the proponents of House Bill 3037. They're comfortable with this bill. We also worked with Multnomah County and the counties to make sure that they were comfortable with adding that back into. It keeps a very high bar of public interest under the clear and convincing evidence threshold that those can only be released if that standard is met. There's over 400 public records exemptions currently in statute, and making sure that if the public interest, if it's in the best interest of the public to share that information, we want to make sure that that public interest test is included in as many as these of these exemptions as possible. So that's the goal of the bill, and the newspaper publishers support it with the A and Gross version.
Okay, thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
Chair Rosenbaum, other members of the committee, I'm Chris Fick with Multnomah County. As Ms. Wilson said, Multnomah County and the Association of Oregon Counties are supportive of the bill. We appreciate the proponents being willing to work with us on our two areas of concern, which were liability and cost recovery. In terms of liability, because we're dealing with people's personal information, we were concerned that if that information was subsequently leaked or misused, we could be liable if people's identities were stolen. And in terms of cost recovery, there is an additional requirement to notify public employees if someone requests their personal information and to take their feedback into consideration. Even if we don't decide subsequently that the clear and convincing threshold wasn't met, we did want it to be explicitly stated in statute that we were able to recover our costs for the due diligence to do that work and take into account the employee's response.
Okay. Thank you for your testimony. And yes, Senator Boquist.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Help me out. I'm just a revenue. Can you give me an example? What are we talking about? Can you give me a practical example here of how this would work?
Yes, Senator Rosenbaum, Senator Boquist. If the newspaper publishers requested some records of a state employee under this bill, they would have to, typically the agency would come back and say they're subject to the public records exemption under House Bill 3037. Then the newspaper publisher would then have to, by clear and convincing evidence, argue that it's in the public interest to disclose that information. And the agency could then decide whether they agreed that it was in the public interest by the clear and convincing evidence or not. If the agency wants to withhold a record under the exemption and doesn't believe that it's in the public interest, then it goes, it would go into a public interest case, and it would go either to the AG or the DA to determine if the if it was in the public interest to disclose that information or not.
Follow up, Madam Chair?
Yes, go ahead.
Fairly routinely, the newspapers or other entities make requests of, the top 25 employees of ODOT or mm-hmm. ODF&W or any entity like that. Does that fall in this case? Would they have to then send a letter out to all 25 of those individuals asking if their name can be released with their salary? How does that work?
Chair Rosenbaum, Senator Boquist, I believe that the public employees that were covered under House Bill 3037 were home care workers, operators of child care facilities, family child care providers, and operators of adult foster homes. So that those were the folks subject to 3037, and that's who we're adding back the public interest test for.
Thank you very much.
Mm-hmm. Okay, any additional questions? Okay, I don't see any. Thank you for your testimony.
Thank you.
I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3557. Open a work session on House Bill 3557. Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, I move House Bill 3557 to the floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Farioli has moved House Bill 3557 to the floor with a due pass recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Okay, the motion carries. And do we have a volunteer to carry this on the floor?
Oh, Madam Chair, I think somebody made their reputation as a elected public official on the issue of public disclosure. Somebody very near to me.
A former member of the Fourth Estate.
Yes, ma'am.
Right. Senator Burdick, are you volunteering?
I would be happy.
Okay. We'll ask Senator Burdick to be our carrier on the floor, and I'll close the public hearing on House Bill 3557. And I close the work session. And next, I'll open a public hearing on House Concurrent Resolution 32. Erin?
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Concurrent Resolution 32 is honors Edward Whalen.
No.
Okay, we have two people signed up to testify, and I'll call them both Bob Livingston and Lori Wimmer, if you'd both like to come forward. To Senate rules.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Bob Livingston, representing the Oregon State Firefighters Council. I appreciate the opportunity to speak on behalf of HCR 32. Before I start, it's unfortunate today, Roger Martin, who had the foresight and the thoughtfulness to bring this forward, in the fact that he asked Representative Hoyle to use a priority bill to recognize the late Ed Whalen, who served in the legislature and well as doing a lot of things. Unfortunately, Roger wasn't able to be here today. He served with him, and certainly if you haven't listened to his testimony that he provided in House Rules, it was eloquent. It talked quite a bit about not only the service that Mr. Whalen did for Oregon, but for the service that he did throughout his entire life in the Portland community. So I wanted to make sure that got on the record. Specifically for the firefighters, certainly Mr. Whalen is a true brother and a pioneer of the firefighters, not only serving as the president of the State Firefighters Council many years ago, but just he epitomized, I think, not only his public service as a firefighter, but advocating for middle-class jobs and fighting for the worker as well as a firefighter. I think those skills that he had for the many years as he served as a Portland firefighter, he was able to put those into use down here, certainly working across the aisles to really solve a lot of problems and to work on a bipartisan fashion. And I would, while I didn't know him personally during the time that he served in the legislature, I certainly had the opportunity to not only meet him after he had retired, I had the unique perspective of also serving and working with his son, which some of you certainly know, Tom Whalen, who unfortunately has also passed away, and that had served in the Oregon legislature. And I was fortunate enough to work with Tom, not only in a political sense, but also as a firefighter, and worked for him on the same engine company. And so I think the Whalen family has a long history of serving Oregonians, and I think a couple of people that come to mind in embodying what not only the late Ed Whalen stood for, but to really encapsulate what Roger noted in his testimony, two pioneers and two true statements that I can think of would be the late Senator Hannon and how he worked across both party lines, and certainly the former Senator Vern Duncan, two people that I respect a great deal. So with that, I just wanted to put on the record that the firefighters would be most appreciative of this getting passed on to the Senate floor for adoption. And I would just end with one note that Roger did tell me on the phone today that he did some research on this, and while certainly this may never happen again, he tells a story, and he had it verified with some of the other people, that during late one session when Representative Whalen was serving, there was a little bit of downtime close to sine die, and he was challenged. He was a pretty good athlete, and he was challenged to see if he could kick a football from outside the House chambers, see if he could kick it all across and land it into the Senate chambers. And lo and behold, Roger tells the story, and it's been verified that on the very first try, Representative Whalen was able to kick the football from the House chamber clear over, and it landed into the Senate chamber. And with that analogy, I would certainly ask you to kick this resolution to the Senate floor. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you for your testimony. Please go ahead.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair and members. For your record, Lori Wimmer representing Ed Whalen's family as his daughter-in-law. I'm here today to thank you for considering this resolution to commemorate Ed on the eve of his passing. I hope to share a glimpse of the man we knew, bits that don't make it into resumes and resolutions and obituaries. I asked my daughter what she would say about the man who was her step-grandfather. Ed was like an eclair or a loaf of ciabatta bread, tough on the outside, soft on the inside, she said. That probably captures him about as well as anything. Ed was stoic, humble, and generous, with a dry wit and a twinkle in his eye, especially when people confused him with the other Ed Whalen. And though his accomplishments firmly land him in history that is written about Oregon, one wouldn't know that from his self-deprecating and intensely private demeanor. I won't recount the accomplishments that have been listed elsewhere, but instead I'll share some of the things most people don't know about this larger-than-life man. Ed was a personal friend of President John F. Kennedy, but he was grumpy and displeased by President Kennedy's brother, Robert Kennedy. After Republican Governor Tom McCall appointed this AFL-CIO president, who was widely referred to as the Godfather when he served, to be his first ever director of the Economic Development Department, it was Ed Whalen who laid the groundwork to bring Hewlett-Packard to the state. As the public affairs manager for PGE, Ed became the president of the Capital Club, for which he was given a silver memento box, and that box, along with his political button collection, he gave to me in honor of our shared profession. Some other snapshots. As a young firefighter, Ed was among the first responders to the site of the Vanport flood. He had many vivid memories he used to recount to us of pulling people out of the water and saving lives. Ed was the ultimate bipartisan legislator. His many friends to the day he died would attest to this. When his son Tom served in the legislature in 1997, Ed asked him how often the caucus met. When Tom told him, Ed nearly fainted. In the late 50s and early 60s when he served, the House caucuses met as many times per session as caucuses do now per week. As House Minority Leader, Ed very nearly became Speaker. Only a November election outcome stood in his way. When he served in the legislature, there were no Capitol wings. Members' floors were on the members' desks were on the floor, and that was their office, and their staff literally cut and taped amendments into the printed bills as they were amending them right at the desks. His wife Phyllis, a descendant of the original settlers of the Aurora colony, by the way, served ably as his legislative assistant. In those days, Ed told me libations flowed freely. After taking the cure himself, Ed became an inspirational speaker and a mentor for AA. When the Oregon Historical Society attempted to schedule oral history interviews with Ed, he balked. It was only when I reminded him that his grandfather, Julia, might appreciate a recording of his accomplishments for posterity and for the family that he finally relented. Ed had the heartbreaking misfortune of having to bear the loss of both of his sons and both of his wives. After his first wife of many decades died, Ed contacted a former classmate on whom he had a crush in elementary school. He hadn't seen her in decades, of course,
But when he called her, she agreed to meet, and within just a few weeks, they became inseparable. He asked me in June 1997, just 6 months after Phyllis had died, whether it would be wrong to marry Jean so soon. I said to him, Ed, you're old. Do it. He liked that kind of directness. So 3 days after I married his son, he married Jean and enjoyed the last 14 years with her. And in true Ed fashion, their wedding consisted of a quick trip across the river to Stevenson, Washington, where he said all the kids eloped. Only Tom was allowed to be there because they needed a witness. I know that Ed would be deeply touched that the House of Representatives and the Senate are considering this concurrent resolution, just as he was when you similarly honored his son in 2013. Though he was truly a modest man, eschewing the limelight, he also held this institution in highest esteem. On behalf of his family, friends, and many admirers, thank you so much for returning the favor.
Thank you both for your testimony, and I don't see any questions for you, so thank you again. I'll close the public hearing on House Concurrent Resolution 32, open a work session on HCR 32. Senator Farioli.
Madam Chair, I move HCR 32 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Senator Farioli has moved HCR 32 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Is there any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? The motion carries. I will volunteer to carry this on the floor, and I'll close the work session on HCR 32. And we have two more resolutions. Before we lose our quorum, why don't we see if we can just crank these out, too? I don't think we have anyone signed up to testify. I'll open a public hearing and work session on House Concurrent Resolution 17.
And, Madam Chair, members of the committee, House Concurrent Resolution 17 honors the 2014 Southern Oregon University Raiders football team for the first ever National Association of Intercollegiate Athletics Football National Championship. It comes due with no revenue, no fiscal impact. We do not have any of the sponsors here to talk to the bill, but they, and in particular, Senator Barrett Sugar did ask that he carry the bill because he was sorry he could not be here today.
Great. Senator Farioli?
Madam Chair, I move HCR 17 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Senator Farioli has moved HCR 17 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Any objection? Motion carries. We'll ask Senator Burt Sugar to be our carrier, and I'll close the work session on HCR 17 and open a public hearing and work session on HCR 31.
And Madam Chair, members of the committee, HCR 31 commends the intercollegiate athletic achievements of Oregon State University women's basketball team. It has no revenue, no fiscal impact, Madam Chair.
Okay. On HCR 31, we are in a work session. Senator Farioli?
Madam Chair, I move HCR 31 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation.
Senator Farioli has moved HCR 31 to the floor with a be adopted recommendation. Any discussion on the motion? Any objection to the motion? Motion carries, and it looks like Senator Gelser is the chief Senate sponsor, so we'll ask her to be our carrier, and I'll close the work session on HCR 31, and members with nothing further to come before us, we're adjourned. Thank you. Thank you.